Hello, and welcome to the Bus Factor. Live from the Bus Factor studio in the office today, we have a guest, one you may recognize. He's been on the show before.
Hello, everyone.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
So my name's Michael. That's about as much information as I'm going to give out.
Here we are. The camera angle looks different today. It isn't showing the road. Yeah. Oh, we do need to reset the counter. You're right. Let's reset that counter. The camera angle is different because we camera hard and all that stuff. In fact, we're running on the old camera, I think, with the worst video quality because we had problems with the last camera. We don't have a sweet hardware setup. But you can donate to us on Patreon if you want to see our hardware setup get better. So how are you today, Mr. Michael?
I'm not too bad, Stephen. And how about you?
I'm okay. I haven't been out for long. Before we get started on the let's start with the important part and then we'll go to the less important parts. The important part is, how many buses do we think are going to run a red light?
Well, I'd say it's got to be a good 20%, right?
20% of buses?
Yeah.
That seems crazy.
I've seen this intersection. I ride the bus every day.
Yeah. There is a law. I'd be surprised if it was 20%.
15%, 10%. I want to know 5%? I want to know your historical stats. As you can tell, I'm super well prepared for this.
We don't have so we don't count the normal buses that go through. So we don't actually have that information.
Right. You don't know what portion of the buses are bad.
But so, as a sneak preview, we do have a dedicated team working full-time on a revolutionary software project we have a Turner coming through while there's walkers as well. Ooh. So let's hope someone gets hit.
A Turner?
Patricia,
a Turner.
Oh,
they come around that corner so quick.
Yeah, and you know, people don't look because people
absolutely
do not realize. So we have a software project that will allow us to run stats like this, so we can use it to count the number of buses that go past and count the number of red light runners. So we can work out those stats. The project is still being worked on, but this project is going to revolutionize the bus factor industry. Thousands of people around the world will.
This is really tense, Stephen. I've never really just kind of sat here and just looked at this intersection.
Oh, yeah? It's,
I mean, people changing lanes right in the middle of the intersection. They're going so fast.
They do. My favorite, I see, it's not the fast parts I like, it's the slow parts.
Oh, that guy's got LED spinners!
Oh shit, he does. Can we see that on the?
That was cool.
I don't think we saw it on the camera, but he definitely
you'll
have
did. Have to take our word for it. That dude was, that was flash. If he'd been going like twice as fast, that would have been some like Tron light cycle.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because it would have been like a trailing.
Yeah. Instead of just like blinking red, green, blue LEDs.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's bring the chat up as well. So I reckon we're gonna have 5 buses run red lights today. I'm going low. I'm lowballing it. I reckon 5 buses.
Excuse me, Stephen.
No problem. And yes, we do need to wash the windows and dust the windows and all that stuff.
There's actually a fully grown plant in your guttering out there. Like several fully grown plants. That's pretty good.
Yeah, so that happens a lot in Wellington.
Those guys are thriving.
You can't see them on the camera, but yes, we have at our apartment at home, actually, we have like an entire ecosystem. We like the birds come and forage from the gutter plants, because the gutter plants like grow and like they're almost like vines growing across over the gutters, but they're not, they're just, it's a bit weird.
A microcosm.
Yes. Yeah, because it's not massive ecosystem, but it does contain birds, foragers, plants, you know. We just need like a carnivore lurking in the grass, and it'll be complete.
Pretty cool. What do you guys think of the new city council sign across the other side of the intersection? Can you see that in the video?
Are you talking about the one by the McDonald's?
Yeah, the one by the McDonald's.
Been there for a long time now,
like 6 months or something, right?
Yeah. Can we see that behind the chair? No, we can't actually see it today. So this is slightly to the right of the camera. We have seen them. Obviously, long-time listeners will know that there is a McDonald's there. There's a sign there.
Have you noticed any kind of observable change on the the pedestrian traffic flow now that the signs are around for them?
Not observable. I tend to think most of the people coming past here, especially 5 to 6, not tourists.
That's true. They've got a place to be. They know where they're going. Yeah.
They're walking. I mean, that's part of why it's so busy here, because everyone's just like, I want to get through. That being said, people do tend to hang around in that area in front of the McDonald's, but I don't know if any of them like look at the sign. I don't know what's on the sign. I walk past that every day, and I don't know what's on it.
So I guess you'd say it's maybe not that effective.
What's the purpose of it?
Like, well, it tells you how to get to places.
Maybe it's effective, like, because I don't need to know how to get to places. So
I suppose that's true, yeah.
We don't have like a good way to judge. How do you even measure that? I don't know.
You probably put up like a camera system and you like watch the area around the sign.
I don't know if that would tell you though, because it'll just tell you how many people are looking. It doesn't tell you how many people are lost and have their problems solved because of it. What you really need to do, I think, is measure other ways people are retrieving information. For example, hits to the website for maps and see if that number decreases.
Yeah, I suppose that works. Or just get like a dude to snipe them with RFID as they go past the sign, make them easier to track or whatever.
Yeah, you could do that. You know,
like those RFID spikes that I linked you to last night. You could just push one of those into a person.
I thought, what are those made for? What size are they? Who knows? These are like, they looked not super pleasant, to be honest.
Like RFID golf tees. If anyone knows what the purpose of RFID golf tees are, just let us know in the chat. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Was that a red light runner? I'm fucking not on it today.
We're just having so much fun here on the Bus Factor that we're not even paying attention to the buses.
You gotta help me out, because we're gonna make sure we get all the red light runners.
Like, I'm gonna be honest with you, Stephen. I've lost all capacity for rational thought this week. So,
well, to be honest, watching buses go through a red light isn't particularly rational thought. You know, Plato's sitting back there in the ancient days, he's philosophizing about red light runners. I don't think so. He would have chilled out on his weekend after a hard week of working and been like, I'm going to watch the chariots go past the guards who are like, stop.
Oh, we got traffic backing up. The people crossing the road are almost touching.
Not backing up enough, though.
No, they got away.
We did have one backed up before that actually like just stopped before the thing. See, a lot of people going through this intersection don't understand the lights. So
it
they
is
go
a complicated
halfway through.
Intersection, yeah.
Yeah. They go halfway through and they get to this pedestrian crossing in front of us and then they stop. And then like a bus tries to go and they don't go because they think they're not allowed to go. And it's like, you're sitting in the middle of the intersection. It's better to go.
Just get out of the way. You're not going to run anyone over.
Yeah, just literally look. Am I going to run someone over? No. Fuck it. Get out of the intersection.
That's like the number one rule of driving. Don't let your car touch anything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Like if you can get that one down, you can pretty much deal with an automobile.
Yeah. You could break the law, but yes, you're dealing with the majority of problems. I once was driving to work. And I spun out. It was very weird. It was like wet and I was driving and I was like going up to a roundabout and a car was just randomly stopped just like outside of the roundabout. And I was like, what is the car? Like, this is not like kind of highway-ish, you know, like 80K zone. So you go to a roundabout and carry on. I was like, why is there a car stopped in the middle of the road in an 80K zone? That's not super safe. I was like, whatever.
That's probably a bad idea.
So I went around the roundabout and just managed to spin out crazily. It was just the weirdest sensation of being like, whoa, my car is spinning. What's going on? And it felt like it went for ages. And eventually, like, I put on the brake because I didn't know it before then. Before that, I was just like, whoa, weird. And braked.
Yeah. I mean, if you were an Uber driver, that's probably a 2-star review there.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. You know what I did today? I went to go get an Uber. So I walked out to him. I opened the door. Just as I opened the door, he accelerated to leave. And I was like, oh, shit. Sorry, man. I didn't see you. And he was like slamming on his brakes. And he's like, oh. And then I got in and he just was like, thought it was canceled. I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, the app. Yeah, I thought it was canceled. I was like, oh, okay. That's weird. Why were you trying to leave me?
Did you still give him a good review?
Yes, because I forgot. Because when I got out of the Uber, I was like in a rush for a meeting. And then when I was leaving the meeting, I was just, you know, tapping. And
yeah, that's how they get you.
Yeah. It's like tough because he clearly didn't see me. And the thing is, like, what could I have done different? I don't know. Like, maybe walked in front of him and been like, hey, buddy.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to shuffle your feet and, like, call out periodically to let them know that you're around, right? Like, so you don't step on them. You, like, make a lot of noise with your feet, kind of shuffle them through the grass and stuff.
Is that a thing? What does that work on?
You know, stonefish, Uber drivers, snakes, that kind of thing.
Oh, is that okay? I didn't actually know that. Yeah, I thought
if you're in an area with a lot of rays, you might want to shuffle your feet through the sand so you're not putting one, you know, straight down on a ray and surprising it.
Oh, real as well? Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought rays would just not give a shit.
Oh, I mean, they're pretty chill, but...
Yeah. Not like jellyfish. Jellyfish will just fuck you up.
Yeah, they'll just go straight for you. You know, jellyfish within, like, multiple kilometers, it sees you there. Home just, yep. Blam, yeah. Straight in there. They have a lot of control over where they're going, and they move real fast, so...
Bloop. Bloop. I remember going to beaches as a kid and seeing, like, thousands of jellyfish washed up on the beach and just being like, I'm going to die. I'm going to... Why are we at this beach? I'm going to die. There are clearly too many jellyfish here. Ugh.
Yeah. Have you seen the... Have you seen the stuff that's been happening the last few years where the jellyfish are like turning our oceans into their oceans? They're like slowly taking over planet Earth. And
I feel like I heard something like about this, but I feel like you might be paraphrasing some other news story, possibly. What are they actually doing?
All I'm saying is that they're turning up in mass numbers and they're jamming the cooling systems of nuclear reactors, all right? That's all I'm saying.
Are they actually doing that?
Yeah, there's great photos. There's like... guys who work at nuclear reactors standing around looking really unhappy with pitchforks and giant buckets full of jellyfish.
Why don't they have like a filter on it? Like
they do have a filter, but the filter fills up. Some poor person has to go and clear all the jellies out of that filter.
Why don't they just like blow the jellyfish away?
Or you put like a giant cruel jellyfish macerator on the thing or something. Like chew them up into a jelly.
jelly. Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea. Look, I would just blow them away. Like filter fills up, just blow back heaps and then
look, I'm no nuclear power plant engineer, Stephen, but
it does sound like a solvable problem to me though. Though that being said, when I have tried to solve problems in the past involving computers, it normally doesn't turn out well. So.
Well, yeah, name one thing about computers that did turn out well.
You could argue that easy access to pornography. You know,
that's true. I mean, that's been a pretty big driver for technology over the last few decades. So,
yeah, like yeah, a lot of the big technologies, new internet, a lot of the formats we have.
Higher bandwidths, bug bounties, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Though, interestingly, like if you think about YouTube, actually, I think somewhat took over because Google's a technology company, they get to develop new codecs. So they've driven like a lot of the codec development in the last 5 years, I could say.
Right. Yeah.
Rather than the porn sites.
You see the news from, I think it was this week or last week, ISPs complaining that gamers had been ruining the network performance when a more rational analysis sort of suggests that maybe it's Netflix.
It was, yeah. So I believe that was the NBN people in Australia.
Yeah, I think it was in Australia, yeah.
Which, I mean, that just tells you they're retarded, you know. Like it's insane. That was the country where we had one of the Minister for Communications say, oh, we don't need new internet because I upgrade my router every few years and it just kind of solves everything. So I think we're good.
Yeah, I think they were probably being disingenuous at best to say that, you know, people gaming were making the NBN slow.
Yeah, it's such a weird group to pick on. It makes sense from a, like, you know, choose someone to blame who can't really fight back because what a gamer's going to do.
Yeah, I'm not even sure that gamers as a demographic really exists at this point. Like, you look at kids and teenagers and young people and they're pretty much all quote-unquote gamers at this point.
Yeah, but those kind of people, if someone's like, gamers are running the internet, I think they would be like, huh? Man, whatever. I don't think that applies to me.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, also from, you know, a technical perspective, what's going to use more bandwidth on your network? Streaming real-time HD video or streaming some positional updates for a computer game character?
Like, yeah, it's
one of those is in kilobits per second and one of those isn't.
Yeah, well, it depends if you're watching, like, the fucking shitty
240p YouTube. Yeah, I guess, yeah, if you're in Australia, you're probably watching 240p YouTube, but...
Yeah. I guess, like, a lot of when it comes to the NBN, they have a history of lying and just kind of getting away with it. Not exactly getting away with it. People call them out, but there's no consequences for lying. Like, what's the consequence of blaming gamers? There's no downsides, and the upside is now that someone out there thinks, oh, okay, that explains it. I've got someone to blame now.
Pretty much. I mean, it's one of the evergreen problems with computing, right? Is that you can tell a person literally anything about a computer system and there's no way for them to disprove it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's pretty messed up.
You shouldn't Google Google, Stephen. Don't look up Google on Google. You'll break the internet.
I like the recursion one. On a similar vein, quite unrelated actually, but it just made me think of like
good segue
users and stuff. Don't you love the way that if you sent out an email to a government department and just said, you know, because we do phishing for a lot of people.
You don't want to be admitting that in public. Surely that's going to reduce the effectiveness of your phishing campaign, Stephen. Oh,
surely. Now the jig is up. They'll know now. We do some somewhat complicated phishing campaigns depending on everything. Oh, look at these guys. We're going to red lights.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been looking at the buses. Like 60% of what we're doing here.
It is.
It's a pretty full crossing. There's a lot of people going across. What do you think's the largest group you've ever seen go across in one go?
So we have had tour group isn't the right word, like work groups and that kind of thing that have 50 people that all try and shuffle across at once. I would say that's the biggest.
How many people do you think it would take crossing the road before the pedestrians could take control?
Two people, right? If two people stand in the middle of the road, the cars are just like, well, fuck. They can't. Their options are like kill a dude or like hurt him or give up control, right? I'd say two. That being said, you definitely want to make sure the car's stopped first. I think there was a red light runner. I'm pretty sure there was a red light runner.
Can we get the action replay?
We can't because I'm too late. I'll start this, and this gives us a live replay.
Oh, yeah, the old 15-second lag view. Yep.
Yes, do you know how our replay works, our instant replay?
No, tell me how it works.
Okay, so if we go here, you might be able to see. Click replay. You see what that is? That is the Twitch loading screen.
Oh, it's the Twitch screen.
Yeah. So we just embed the Twitch viewer, and that's it. Okay, yeah, I did think there was a red light runner. We're going to bump that up. I said 5. You didn't pick how many buses you thought were going to go past. Red light runners.
It seems like Interrider there confirming the red run.
Yep. But how many red light runners do you think we're going to have? You've got an advantage. You've seen that we've had one in 20 minutes.
Oh, it's a tricky question, Stephen. I'm going to say
it's a linear or exponential.
I'm
going to
say 6.
6, okay.
Yep, 6 red light runs with a plus or minus 3 margin of error.
I don't know if we accept plus or minus 3 margin of errors here. Look at that. Look at that bus. What is he doing? Do you see what he's up to? No. Who knows what he's up to? Oh, we are definitely going to have one this slide cycle, right? Right?
Yeah, there's
right.
No way.
Yeah! Yeah. Oh!
Straight through.
Easy. Two. Possibly three? Just two. Fucking look at that.
Man, that last one was blatant.
Yeah, that was,
they
that
just
was
went
crazy.
Like,
but what was that front bus up to?
The mana bus.
The very front one that was just going really slowly.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
The very one, it was 1, 7, did you say? Oh, 7, how many do you think? Okay. There was 2. We add 2 on, so we got to 3.
Are you looking forward to the new bus livery, Stephen? Are you excited about having that rolled out?
When are they doing it?
They've started now. Like, we've had a couple of lime and yellow ones coming through.
Okay. Yes. No. That one. Yeah. I thought there was some new ones above that. It was a bit nauseating to begin with. I didn't not like it.
Yeah. I was a bit uncomfortable as well. But it's hard to tell if it's like legitimately bad or just different. I think my favorite bus livery is still the like Go Bus Yellow, like the big like proper Wellington yellow bus. That's the real classic for me.
Yeah. The thing is, so every city that I've been in tends to have a different color for their buses. They tend to be vibrant, bright. When I came here from Hamilton, which used green, I was just like, the buses look completely wrong. They look ridiculous.
Oh, there goes a really nice, like, Metlink on our way, but it's still yellow. I've noticed that they've partially reskinned a bunch of the buses. So there's still, like, some Valley Flyers floating around in the, what I think they call the licorice all sort color scheme. They're like purple and orange.
There we are. Look at that.
Oh. That's
not only, so is he blocking, I believe he'll be blocking one lane of traffic as well.
Yeah, they're blocking everything.
What?
Whoa.
What?
That is a full house.
One, right two, there. And that guy was blatant. That was not subtle.
Oh, man. And now they're stuck because they've got pedestrians.
They won't wait for long. Okay, we didn't bump that up by 2 again.
Yep, there we go. And he's going. Yep. Clearing it out.
Which, the problem is, he's blocking. Oh, no, he managed to get through mainly. Okay, bump that up by 2.
Is this peak bus? I mean, what time's peak time?
We don't normally. Yeah, this is pretty much peak time. The entire hour is peak time, but this is. We don't normally get them bunched up this close together. We did have one time where we had one bus running a red light every, like, 13 minutes or something for 3 cycles. So I was, like, at 13 past, at 26 past, and something above that. That was pretty good. But we don't really get it quite like this. Maybe it's just backed up for some reason. Also, the electric bus, which we have seen here.
The electric bus.
You know what pisses me off so bad? The fact that they're like, oh, Wellington's rolling out electric buses. It's going to be so great. Can you believe how forward-thinking we are running out electric buses? And I'm like, we had those already. We had them.
Yeah, we literally did have electric buses already.
So you can't... Oh, whoa,
it's happening again.
What even is going on here?
Our estimates were so off.
Maybe there's something happening up there. Maybe there's like that bus like went to go and just like had to stop from all the pedestrians. Maybe there's like roadworks or a crash or something that's back in the map.
Yeah, that's
then...
true. It's quite possible. You need to do a live cross to someone who's out there who's like got the word on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is really frustrating because not only did we have electric buses, but we had like citywide distribution system for powering them. So.
Yep. And they all, whoa, is that a second bus? Did I just miss? Yeah, that's
yeah,
another
that's
one on.
Another one.
Where
man,
did that one come from?
We're just blowing through the targets tonight.
What the?
Just blowing
where
through
to have
them.
You more on the show more often. Where did that bus even come from? Damn.
You have like a Bitcoin ka-ching sound every time you increment the number.
Oh, we should.
You really should. You should have like one of those like Twitch streamer graphics where coins fly all over the screen.
Yeah. Damn, this is just
did you know you can get custom coins made by Chinese companies? You could get the Bus Factor coin made.
I have like a dog poop coin somewhere. Yeah,
it's pretty similar. It's kind of similar idea.
I presume you have one of these somewhere. Oh, Jesus. Thumbling coins. It's not a euphemism. That was another one, right? That was fucking another one. Yeah, fucking let me just double check on the live replay. Yellow.
I mean, the tail was going through.
The tail was over the line. I'm inclined to count it. We're not reporting it.
Yeah, let's do a half. Can we do a half?
Yeah, we can do a half.
Yeah, let's do a half increment.
Advantages of not having you here, we can fucking just...
A 0.25, yeah, yeah.
No, 0.25, you reckon? Yeah, because it was just the tail bit. Yeah. 7.25.
Just the backy bit of the bus, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, was mostly through. It was almost entirely through, yeah.
Yeah, it was mostly through. I mean, we'll be generous, give them a quarter.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, do you know Hugh, the last few times we've been doing it, literally writes down every incident and report, like, sends them an email summary of every red light run for the time?
Hugh is a very conscientious citizen.
I would not use the word conscientious citizen to describe Hugh.
He has our best interests at heart.
Maybe. He genuinely cares about some things that other people don't.
Yeah,
say
and
that.
His very particular interest.
Yes, like slight amounts of gravel on a road. That was my favorite one. Okay, should we crack into some... we talked about computers, I guess a bit. Oh yeah, I wanted to say, we'll crack into some news after this, but with a lot of these people we're fishing, we do complicated things. We could just send out an email that said, please give me your password. And it was just a link to a form that said... Your password, please.
Yeah. I mean, even probably if you linked it to Google Docs, which has that big do not put your password in here field.
Oh, yeah.
You just could... like County Password Inspector, give us your password, please. Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. Doing the access card stuff recently, also, it's like when you first learned about lockpicking for the first time, and you're like, hang on, people can just pick these?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like Sharrow described, when you first learn about computer security, it's like... You're the dude who discovered microbes. Like,
yeah.
It's like, holy shit, germ theory of disease. I can't touch anything anymore. Everything is filthy.
That's pretty much what it's like. Yeah, you're like, it's...
How does society function with these little crawly things everywhere?
Yeah, computers are pretty bad. I don't know. It's unsolvable as well at the moment, which is unfortunate, I guess.
Yeah, I love... If folks listening to the podcast haven't seen Peter Gutman's slide deck on unsolvable security problems. I think, what's the phrase that he uses? Like, it's like pernicious problems or something like that. If you search on Google for like Peter Gutman unsolvable computer problems. What did I miss?
Sneaky
bus.
He went through a red light. That's what you missed. Route number seven. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, it's a really, really nice PDF slide deck of like some, you know, essentially provably unsolvable problems. It's a really good read. I definitely recommend it.
Someone was like, oh, if I wanted to hear Hugh bashing, I'd go listen to Silvio. we're not bashing him. We're not bashing him. He's good.
I don't mind Hugh.
He's good. I do the podcast with him. Can't find him too bad. Yeah, he's good. But he is on honeymoon, which means we get to be mean to him.
Didn't he get married a really long time ago?
Not a really long time ago. 6 months or something?
Wow, okay. I felt like it was longer than that.
He's been, like, he's known her for longer, I guess. And been dating her and living with her, I think.
That's disgusting.
I know, right?
These people who waits to get married.
Oh, wait, hang on. You thought I was going to say living together before marriage is fucking blasphemous.
No, these days it's all about the married at first sight. Have you not seen reality television?
I have.
That's the social norm, Stephen. The social norm is you meet someone on television for the first time and you get married.
Get married. It's so ridiculous how distorted it is with that kind of show normalizing getting married early. Not that I really care about it. Like, sure, yeah, if someone wants to do that, go
Stephen
ahead.
And I are getting married after the podcast, so.
We have seen each other now. We have locked eyes for a while, so, you know, interacted
being,
with each other for a while.
They say that being on The Bus Factor is, you know, approximately as good as being on reality TV, so.
I feel like that's an insult. I'm not sure, though. Okay, let's crack into some news, shall we?
Yeah, so, we'll do the computer news.
Yeah. Did you know that fluoride has been linked to acne? Which really is the least concerning thing I could read, really. Fluoride linked to acne, I'd be like, okay, well, keeping teeth okay, so maybe that's worth it.
Yeah, that's probably a health trade-off that's not that bad.
Yeah, it's really not that bad. Especially given, like, I don't have bad acne, so it can't be that strong of a link.
Yeah.
We've got... old conspiracy magazine here. Nexus, the alternative news magazine. War is good for business. That one's actually true.
Yeah, I mean, there's a nugget of truth at the center of any good conspiracy, Stephen.
Yeah. What's the nugget of truth at Lizard People?
Anti-Semitism?
that's the nugget of truth?
The thing that literally exists. Like,
okay.
Lizard People's just anti-Semitism.
Whoa, okay, so you see
It was a horn. It was a horn. What did they miss?
Because a bunch of cars were backed. Oh, whoa, what is this? Is he...
He's just stopped
in the
intersection.
That is not appropriate behavior,
What if people wanted to cross the road?
They can't now.
That's rude.
People do want to cross the road, right?
Yeah, they're stacking up. That guy, always going for it. He's just
walking around.
Straight out there. Is he wearing headphones as well?
Yeah, I don't like wearing headphones while walking around. I don't mind it really late at night when...
Yeah, well, certainly not crossing the road. I mean, one of the big cues that you're about to be killed is the sound of an approaching vehicle. Although I guess the time of that's kind of coming to an end as well with electric cars, you know, the silent killer, they call them.
Is that what they call them? I did hear it was a problem for, for deaf or blind people or something like that.
I think just
blind
in general. People, so actually, the current... Nissan Leaf line, the fully electric cars, they're quite popular in Wellington. They actually have a kind of like courtesy noise that they generate with a speaker. But the very first model of Leaf that was on the market here has an option to turn that noise off.
Yeah.
It's like the assassin mode in the Leaf.
Good for sneaking up on motherfuckers.
But, yeah, I think regulators were pretty unhappy with them for putting that in there. So the later ones, you have to leave that on. But
I mean, like, I
if
like
you can get one of those first gen Nissan Leafs and you need to kill someone and they're within like 80 kilometers of where you are right now, bam.
Oh, because of the range.
Yeah, the first gen ones, they don't go so far.
Why 80 kilometers? I thought it had a target seeking
if you stop and take a break, eat a muffin, charge up for 6 or 7 hours, you could go further.
Yeah, so electric cars have some problems, don't they?
Don't get me wrong, I think electric cars are the future. They're infinitely
better. Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
I mean, even the current gen Leaf is like twice as good on range or something like that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the killing feature, so.
I like the killing feature. Because, like, sometimes you just want to be quieter, right?
Yeah, well, that's why they put the button in. It's like the, you know, the politeness button.
Yeah.
You're driving through a crowded movie theater. You don't want to upset people.
Slight hum. What's that humming? I don't know, man. Ignore it. Watch the movie. Okay, we do have some news. It's been a long time coming.
Yep. Computer news.
The big story of the week, in my opinion, is the Intel floating... Point. I listen exclusively to traffic sounds while walking around.
that's practically as bad as when you're like you're driving and a rap song comes on the radio that has like police sirens in the background. Oh,
that's the worst. Like, yeah. I hate it. I do think it should be illegal. So I don't mind the song so much, aren't so bad. The adverts get me.
If you're gonna censor an ad so that you can't have the swears in it, I think it's pretty reasonable to say maybe don't have the sound of like an approaching ambulance.
Yes, yeah. Because I freak out when I, not that I drive often, but when I do, if I hear like a emergency vehicle, I'm like, what do I do? You know, I just
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it's one of those situations where you're close to violating the cardinal rule. You know, don't touch anything with your car while you're driving.
Yeah, and you see people like at intersections like trying to squeeze up onto curbs and stuff, and they're like, "Don't touch anything! Don't touch anything!"
Yeah, it's driving rule number one.
Actually, I found out you. I may be wrong here, but I'm going to share it anyway because I'm going to pretend like I know. It's still illegal to go through a red light, even if there's an emergency vehicle behind you. Strictly speaking, if you contested it, you'd probably get away with it. But the law doesn't have a thing being like, and if it's an emergency, you can go through. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess that's, you know, it's one of the advantages of having a legal system like ours.
Yeah, where a judge can just be like, no.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that would be more problematic in places like, I think, some parts of Europe where, you know, they have a mandate to interpret laws more literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is straying well into territory that I know nothing about. So
it sounds like you have more knowledge. Oh, fucking yeah. Fucking Valley Flyer. Oh, fucking gee.
Whoa,
see that shit?
That is brazen. What? That was
fucking...
Three in a row, what? Just straight.
That's ridiculous.
Through. Man, our guesses were so far off.
Why is there so many tonight? That's fucking crazy. Hey, 1911?
I'd say at least 11.
That's damn.
11 and a quarter buses.
What is even going on tonight?
At what point does the kill screen kick in?
The kill screen?
You know, like the maximum level that you can get to before the bus factory glitches out. And you
we
can't
haven't
go
got to that
further,
yet. Right. I believe that's one civilian death.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
One civilian death just ticks it over.
Yeah, let's... Moving on.
Okay, the big news of the week, the Intel floating fucking FPP. What does it say?
FP fail, I think, was the trendy name. Yeah, or fail FP or slow FP.
I feel like that came after the bug, though.
No,
like,
maybe it's not FP fail. It was drop FP or
It's got an F and a P in there. We got
that
part.
Yeah. It's a floating point issue, yeah. And it's funny because when you Google Linux FP bug, you find so many.
Yeah, it's not just one, is it? It's actually one of the first levels on Smash the Stack is to like trigger a floating point problem. So this one, I did not read the technical details of how the bug occurs, but what I did read was the impact, right? Do you read a little bit?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's basically one of these, you know, classic evergreen multiprocessing problems where your CPU is pretending to do two things at once by quickly switching backwards and forwards and kind of leaking some of the state from one to the other. Basically it lets, like, one process get access to the contents of the floating point registers for another process. And that is probably in itself not the end of the world, except for the fact that internally in the implementations of instructions like AES, NI, on x86, they use those registers to hold key material.
Yeah, I believe all the SSE instructions as well, which is where you want to store any kind of cryptographic stuff. You want to store that in there, right?
Right.
So make it fast.
Yeah, I mean, I only looked at it from the perspective of AES and I, but yeah, it looks like you might better read, you know, chunks of state out of things. But at the same time, it's also kind of a non-problem because it's been patched for forever in basically anything you're likely to use.
What is it actually? What?
Yeah. Like, so this is a really old bug. Like, it's been under embargo for almost a year now.
Wow, I did not know that.
Well, it's not even like it's not so much even I think that it's been under embargo. It's just that it's not actually that interesting. So, like, we don't know for sure, but there's been speculation that maybe the bug was dropped kind of July, August last year.
Because the timeline of this, the only reason we know about this is because OpenBSD, Theo.
Yeah, that's right. Theo, you know, he's not
after
under embargo.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so it's quite possible I have my facts wrong on this because, it's been a busy week and I haven't, you know, dug right deep into it, but I've got a few bits of info on it. So it's fixed as of kernel 4.9. And if you, if you do much with the Linux kernel, 4.9 feels like forever ago. 4.9 is what, 2016, I think? I think actually that's an accidental fix. I think Linux basically fixed it by virtue of an efficiency fix because manipulating those floating point registers, I think, was quite expensive. And so they decided to just stop doing it in most cases.
Yeah.
So Linux is good. Windows is good. OpenBSD is good. don't know about the impact on other platforms, but it's probably x86, pretty x86 specific, I would imagine. So
yeah, it also seemed hard to exploit.
Well, no,
like,
I actually don't think it was. So I don't know if you saw Colin Percival's comments on this.
Okay, but he said I did. So he tweeted saying that he whipped up a proof of concept in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, 5 hours, I think. That's not from seeing the actual problem. That's from speculation about the problem from someone who knew someone who knew someone who was under the embargo.
Yeah, but the problem is to build the proof of concept, sure, but because you're relying on basically you need a grab state at the very specific time when the key material is loaded into a place you can access, right? So you need to be running at the exact same time that, say, GPG is running with the decrypted keys, comments, and registers.
If you're using ASNI in your CPU, you know, there's a good chance that you're using it for, like, disk crypto, right? And so you're doing AES operations pretty much continuously.
But isn't like, for example, web browsing, doesn't it use ASNI as well to do some of the... Because AES is used in SSL.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't actually know very much about this from a kind of web perspective.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think, like, I think it's probably pretty easy to grab something out of the floating point register, but
yeah,
it's less clear
that was
whether you can kind of mount a practical attack with it.
Yeah. Cool stuff, I guess. It's all in the same kind of basket as the other stuff we've seen recently. Spectre meltdown.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same like CPU performance for correctness trade-off stuff that, you know, has been going on since the early 90s and everybody suddenly got really excited about.
Yeah, it's pretty, I don't know what we're going to see change. Someone said, you know, I know some people who race their Gentoo installs pretty hard, and they were saying like, oh, we're back to like Skylake levels of performance, which they're basically like, oh, all the performance gains we've gained over the last 4 years, gone.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in terms of performance impact from these kind of speculative execution things, mm-hmm. I feel like it's really not been as drastic as what people had feared.
There are certainly some
like workloads.
Java, I think, is particularly affected.
Yeah, so I think the worst affected thing I've seen so far, so obviously we've switched on, you know, page table isolation and mm-hmm. Related countermeasures on, you know, several thousand machines now.
Yeah.
And honestly, really only a small portion of them turned out to have workloads that were problematic. I think the worst one is like generating custom Debian repositories. For some reason, the software that we use for that, like the package signing software, takes like 10 times as long to run with page table isolation turned on.
Weird.
I mean, the advice that was floating around when this stuff kind of broke 6 months ago, you know, of mm-hmm. if you run it in strace and it slows right down, it's probably going to go slower with page table isolation turned on, is pretty much correct.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, unless you're shoveling around lots of small chunks of data or whatever, you're probably not making that many syscalls.
Yeah, no, I mean, I haven't noticed anything, you know, and I can imagine.
And it's obviously not just about page table isolation. There's a whole lot of, you know, whole world of mitigations for the stuff that I don't super well understand. But
yeah, I do like the fact that your CPU info now contains a thing being like bugs, CPU bugs.
Yeah, that's right. What was it, 4.13, 4.14, somewhere around there in the Linux kernel, they added that SysFS thing that actually tells you what's wrong with your processor. That's really helpful.
It's depressing looking at CPU bugs because, you know, you're just like, my CPU, it's CPUs. It adds numbers, it divides numbers. Okay. And then you'll just be reading through something one day and it'll be like, oh yeah, if you do a jump instruction in the wrong place, it forgets how to add. It'll just be like, what's 1 + 1? Yeah, 13 million, mate.
Yeah. I mean, there's a great slide deck, which I think Peter Gutman linked on the ISIG list, New Zealand ISIG list. Stephen can probably tweet it out of the Bus Factor account or something later, but it's a really good overview of kind of like how we got into this situation where it's cheaper to build a faster, less accurate CPU that pretends to be a slower, more accurate CPU in terms of kind of the way that hardware life cycles work and the way that chip development works and things like that. It's a really good insight.
I want to say Haroon Mir, but I can't remember.
No, it wasn't
Haroon.
I think it was, I can't remember who it was either. It might have been Helvar.
Yeah, you're right.
It was Helvar, I think.
Yeah. And the way when you go to do a project now, it used to be like you would build the chip and the chip could only do one thing. And now you're just like, get a general purpose CPU.
Yeah, that's right. It's a reflection of the reason why general purpose computers are so popular and successful everywhere. It's that, you know, instead of building a machine out of pulleys and wires to do a particular task, you just build a universal machine and tell it to pretend to be some pulleys and wires.
Yeah. Which is a weird situation to be in, but I don't know, it's working out okay. Well, it's, you know.
Yeah, is it?
You know, it is what it is.
Instead of building a toaster, we just build a computer and we explain to it how to do toasting.
And then hope that it doesn't also learn how to become part of a Russian botnet.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and blackmail you. Because your toaster will do that nowadays.
That's right. It's kind of interesting. It's interesting to look at the, you know, taking modern software development practices and thinking about applying them to safety critical systems and kind of thinking about, you know, what would you trust more? Do you trust a system that's, you know, I have this kind of hierarchy in my head of the systems that I trust and how much I trust them to do a thing. And like down one end, I've got like, you know, a set of meshing gears with a person who watches it. And then, you know, like some discrete electrical logic, maybe relays if you have to use electronics.
You know, someone's going to stick their finger in one of those gears, though.
Yeah, well, you can put a cover over it, right? A cover doesn't bit rot. That's the thing that's great about a plastic cover, right?
So you check the cover
every 6 months, and if it's not cracked, you're good. It's not like someone finds a cover exploit, which suddenly renders all of the plastic covers that you've put into the world, you know, ineffective.
Yeah. Physical does tend to perform a little bit better.
Yeah, so, you know, cogs and pulleys, one end, discrete logic. You know, maybe if you can't do it with discrete logic, maybe it makes sense to have a microcontroller in there if you, you know, you're careful and you have, you know, no loops, make sure you do that kind of like
you
car
don't
engineering
need, don't
stuff.
Don't need networking support. Fuck that.
Yeah, that's right. And then way, 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 way right down the other end is like an ARM V8 chip running a full Linux with BusyBox and all the developer tools and like.
And all it does is turn a light on and off.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But that's the world we're in.
It is. Well, we got to. People are going to do it because it's cheapest, right? Like they're churning out those system on chips and they're going to put them into things. So I guess that we're really at the point where we can't tell people to go back to ropes and pulleys. We've got to work out how we're going to make those Linux SoCs safer.
Yeah, which I don't know if we're making progress. It doesn't.
I don't know. I mean, there's like I think it's the UK
fucking,
now is doing that.
Fucking yes, two of them. Hey. Fucking got him.
That was
Route
like
3
a,
and Route 7.
We call that a V formation?
I don't know if we have a name for that.
I think we're calling it a V formation.
A V formation when they split off and both run a red light.
They both run a red light.
Yeah, boy.
A flying V, perhaps.
Flying V.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what, like, I think it's the UK is doing now where they're putting a kind of like, this device is guaranteed to get updates and we'll go around to the manufacturer's house and make sure that they're actually doing them, sticker on stuff.
We talked about that last week, maybe?
You can tell I listen to the Bus Factor regularly.
Yeah, that one failed. Was in the courts being fought. And they basically said the reason they can't enforce that is it's a judgment that relies on future behavior or something. So it sounded to me, not a lawyer, it sounded like it was a technical problem where they were just like, well, the court can't technically enforce like future behavior and punish based on future behavior or something like that.
Right. So it's like the age rating on video games.
H rating?
The age rating.
Oh, yeah. Where it's
the old voluntary
ESRB,
don't give this to your children because it's got stabbing in it.
Yeah. I do think it's a step in the right direction that it even got to that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great to see that being discussed. And, you know, I have reservations about it as a scheme as well, but mm-hmm. Maybe it's better than not doing anything. It's a bit hard to say.
Yeah, like the current status is pretty bad, so you probably want
to... Computers, I kind of, a lot of the time, I feel like the computer industry today is where the, like, agricultural chemical industry was in the 50s, where they're just like, yeah, I mean, phosphorus is a toxic byproduct of this process, but it's fine because we can just pump it into the sea. And then we were like, oh, actually, that has a cost. And you probably shouldn't just get away with not paying that cost.
But that's not just the computing industry. That's kind of like life in general, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not the first time that we've had an industry spring up out of nowhere, completely ignoring all social and financial externalities. And then had to maybe come and regulate them a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like the carbon tax would be my big example of where companies are just like, we don't want to pay for the carbon we pump into the atmosphere because we can just deal with that later.
Yeah, but that stuff's been pretty effective as well. Like cars today are much more efficient than they were 20, 30 years ago, right?
Because of regulation.
Yeah, exactly. If we had a similar model that meant that computers had to reduce their carbon emissions.
Yeah, no, definitely. We would need to regulate it. We don't have the regulation yet, though.
No, I'm that's right. It doesn't exist.
And
you can sell a computer to someone that does literally anything.
Yeah, or literally nothing. Yeah, I don't think it's, I don't feel like it's a easy thing to do either, computer regulation. Like, I think about
No, it's really gross stuff because...
Yeah, know, not Volkswagen. They got that emission thing
yeah,
down.
Yeah, Volkswagen, probably the best example of this in recent years, really low emission scores, particularly under controlled test conditions.
Yes. I was talking to someone about this recently and they were like, oh, that was a market response. And I'm like, what? No, people don't want their cars to, like, lie to them. And I was like, no, people want their cars to be fast and fuel efficient.
And cheap.
Yeah, cheap. That's what they want. They don't give a shit about the emissions. And I was like, kind of.
I think that's a misrepresentation. I think if there wasn't a market force for more efficient and more green cars, then they probably wouldn't have happened. Like, someone's got to be lobbying government to give a shit about that stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Someone has to. Yeah. And I'm pro-regulation.
Yeah,
some stuff.
Regulating computers is a particularly difficult kind of situation as well because of, you know, just how personal a lot of computing tasks are these days and how they really do function as kind of like an extension of a person's body.
Yeah, and you begin to, like, I store a lot of logs, for example, chat logs, email logs, that kind of thing. And I begin to, it's like a thing your brain does. It's like the same when we first had libraries. You begin to...
Yeah, or a pocket
space.
Calculator, wristwatch, you know, any of those kind of technological crutches.
You offload your the cognition to something else, and then you become good at using it. So when libraries came out, people stopped remembering things and just remembered how to look things up in a library.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of these things where it's a lot more complicated. Like, don't put as many pollutants into the atmosphere is a pretty straightforward win.
Yeah,
right?
you can calculate the cost, you can calculate how to do it, and you can say, like, how much is it going to cost us to do this, to do that.
That's right. But when you get into regulating computers, you're really getting into, like, regulating how people can think and what they can read and what they can see and how they communicate, and that's way more complicated.
Well, even if you think about must update for 2 years, right? You say you enforce that law, and then Meltdown and Spectre come out, or something like Meltdown and Spectre, and the CPU is affected in this chip, and you can't patch it. What do you do?
That's right. I mean, you're going to have exceptions, obviously, for that.
Yeah.
And you also have to make sure that you're not, you know, we have this kind of thing in New Zealand, particularly, where there's this idea that, you know, someone working away in a garage can change the world, right? And, you know, that may or may not be true these days, but I think it's still important if you're going to regulate these kind of things, not to build systems where people can't do that kind of innovative and, you know, where people can't have control over their own stuff, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could imagine a scenario where, like, this is a perennial and much trodden debate, right? Where, you know, you have to have a license to sell software, right?
Ugh.
Yeah. So no one wants that either. So it's a tricky problem.
Yeah.
And one that we are definitively going to solve right here tonight
here
on
the Bus Factor.
The Bus Factor.
It's solved. I'd be happy if we can just solve the encryption debate. If we can just get that one knocked out, I'd be happy with that. I'll call it a day.
I think that's good advice. Don't give your secrets to Stephen.
Good advice. The good advice is don't give your secrets to anyone, but yes, also me.
I personally experienced giving Stephen secrets, and he lorded it over me for a long time afterwards.
I did. I eventually gave you back a physical copy of the secrets to dispose of.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, don't get Stephen to be your passport referee. You'll live to regret it.
You haven't regretted it. I lost my fucking passport.
You know you have to notify Interpol about that, right?
Yeah, it's on my to-do list.
You've admitted that in public.
I'm going to do it any day now. I'm still looking for it. along with someone's credit card delivered to my house, and which is like, go out, start spending, PayWave, do it. And I was like, I don't.
Yeah, you know the envelope doesn't block the PayWave, right? You can just.
Well, I also opened the envelope because I was like, envelope open. Whoa, credit card.
You're admitting to mail fraud as well?
No, I didn't. I wasn't looking.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Your cat fell over, its claw caught on the corner of the envelope, you know, ripped the top out.
Yeah, didn't you have a drinky bird fell off?
Hit the enter key on the Windows 10 Euler. Yeah, it's crazy how that happens.
It happens occasionally,
It's just,
Okay, what else we got here? There was one thing, we've got different news that we're reading from. I'm reading from, do you see there's a news list up there?
Yeah, no, I'm aware of it, but my list just says SS23 sucks in big letters. So.
We have discussed that, don't share secrets with SS23.
Yeah, that's true, we've got through that, all right, onwards. What's on the actual news list?
The good one there, I think, was the YubiKey Web USB debacle.
Okay, that's old news now, though, isn't it? You haven't talked about that yet.
When did it come out? I thought it came out like last night.
Okay, maybe this is a new YubiKey web USB debacle. You talk about it, and I'll pretend like I know what you're talking about.
Okay, so YubiKey, basically you can fish people via YubiKeys, even though they're meant to be unfishable. So, okay, YubiKeys have multiple different modes, one of which, the one we care about, is called U2F. FIDO is the standards body, U2F.
Yep, or WebAuthn, or web authentication, or...
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And the idea is that this, the way it works is a kind of... It binds to the SSL stream in such a way that you can be sure of the website you're talking to.
Yeah, so basically the secure processor in the YubiKey establishes essentially a mutually authenticated channel with the web server itself. So mm-hmm. your computer and whatnot shouldn't be able to tamper with it. Any man in the middle shouldn't be able to tamper with it, et cetera.
Yeah, and the thing, this protects against multiple things, but the one that fishers care about is that if you go to gmail.evilsite.com and it's like a Gmail login, there's no way the user can possibly enter their YubiKey U2F token on that. It's impossible. The token itself prevents it.
At best, all they can do is let you log into legitimate Gmail, because the token shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, they can never interfere with it. They can't steal cookies. And so that's a pretty sweet defense. It literally makes... The idea is it makes it unfishable. Okay. Enter stage left. Web USB.
One of the greatest extensions to the web.
I understand the intent, but I'm preaching to the choir. Why? What? Like, this seems like a bad idea.
So I have a single board computer mm-hmm. made by a company in the US, and the officially supported mechanism for you to download firmware onto the single board computer is you go to flasher.theirwebsite.com and it runs an in-browser flasher. And honestly, that has made this particular SBC, it's the chip from NextThingCo. Don't try and buy one because they've gone out of business, but they're not admitting it. You will not get your money back and you will not get a chip.
I've heard that happen.
Yeah, but I mean, it's massively broadened how many people can play with the chip. And they don't use Web USB. They make you download a Chrome plugin. But with Web USB, that could equally be Web USB.
Yeah. I do think there is some advantages of having it. Someone cyberized me, Ewan Ra's website where he does the access card cloning. That's done via Web USB. So the idea is you flash a Proxmark with custom firmware that enables Web USB, and then you can just go to a website with it plugged to your computer. And for anyone who's
someone just ran in front of the bus.
Oh, real?
It's okay. They were fine. Yep.
Whoa. We've definitely had higher scores than this. Back in the day, we used to get 20s, this is high
if
four.
Only I could have been here for that.
You were one of the early ones.
That's true.
If anyone who's played with Proxmark and firmware on them, it's just horrible. So it does improve things. But, of course, this presents a problem. If you can use Web USB to talk to the YubiKey, there was a flaw that allowed you to basically... So this was a flaw in... not the YubiKey itself, but rather in Chrome and Windows and kind of how those all interact with each other. And it basically allowed you to bypass that phishing protection.
It's interesting because I thought I saw this months ago, but maybe this is different.
3/01/18?
Yeah, so earlier this year.
Oh, okay, hang on. So there is...
Maybe there's a new thing.
Yes, so... This was research presented at, I think it was Black Hat, by two people, two old mates. And they presented research that allowed you to do this or something like that. Oh my God, YubiKo. Okay, Fincham is just about to come back. Do you want my keys, by the way? Sorry. I'm going to take some time to find this now since I have time. Security. Blah. Oh, security advisories. So the research was originally presented, I believe, at Black Hat. And then more recently, wait, hang on, 3/02. Oh, wait, no, this was ages ago. June 13th. It's hard to tell based on their thing. So February the 16th, some researchers demonstrated how to bypass an origin check using Web USB at OffensiveCon. YubiKo learned of it on February the 27th. They reached out, they demonstrated it. Now, at that time, Yubico started doing their own research, and so that was published on March the 2nd, and that was the same one, a different one, blah, blah, blah. Then they began doing more stuff, and they ended up finding a different bug. So we can explain that to Fincham when he comes back, but it looks like there's multiple different bugs here, some of which were disclosed originally, and some of which were done by YubiKey themselves later. Yeah, no, date formats are hard. The problem is, I also don't know, it's like a CVE. It's like YubiKey CVE 123123 or something. And I'm like, I'm not sure if that's meant to refer to a date or just like an identifier. That looks like a date. 2nd of January, February, March. And that has an identifier on it. So it always weirds me out that like private companies feel the need to develop their own CVE format, that they're like, we don't want to just make it a CVE XXX. We actually want to make it, or YubiKey is VE 123456 or anything like that. A bit weird. It's not their own CVE format. It's just they have their own internal identifier for the bug. He was asking if they made their own. Do you know what I mean? Like their own internal identifier, which I guess kind of is fine, but also I'm just like, why not just use the CVE as the internal identifier? You already have an identifier that's like globally unique. I guess it's like a branding thing as well for a lot of companies to be able to say that they have, they have like 20 a year. Look, you can just look at their identifiers. But yeah, I don't know. It's also kind of hard to Google CVEs is another thing. So maybe it was an effort to make it more Googleable. Like if you try Googling CVEs, you'll be like CVE 123 and Google will show up with just completely unrelated CVEs. So maybe it makes sense in that sense. I also realized I gave Fincham my keys, which don't actually let him get back in. Hey, Fincham, my keys don't let you back in. Sorry.
All right, I'm back.
So I went over the YubiKey thing. There is multiple different bugs. Like the original one got disclosed, and then they did more research and found another one. And there was also a bunch of like DSA for Debian. I was thinking about how they each have their own kind of like CVE like formats.
Who the Linux distros?
YubiKey does.
Oh, every single vendor in existence has their own shitty re-implementation of CVE.
Yeah, but why?
Well, we have Oval, right? So Oval is one of the...
No, Oval is.
It's one of the, like, universal vulnerability reporting formats or, like, universal advisory formats.
Oh, is that the one that's... Okay, so that's the one that the CVE people use or different?
So it lets you specify, like, file names and hashes and stuff like that. So you can be, like... I think even package versions, it's got concept of, you know, packages. Yeah. But it's useless. No one uses it, like... Officially, Debian publishes a feed of Oval data, but if you actually look at it, it's junk. And yeah, this is one of the big problems that I spend a lot of time on.
Through, but it almost is fine.
It's one of the problems I spend a lot of time on is getting advisories into a common machine readable format. And it blows my mind. If I'm spending this much effort on it, what is everyone else doing? They're just ignoring the problem?
Well, okay. Security. Okay, you go to your Debian box. And there's an update to be done. Do the update.
That's true. So, yeah, I mean, admittedly, as a, you know, I work in a company that's a managed service provider, and that's kind of an unusual space to be in, I suppose. And
it's not super unusual, but I do think...
The number of computers that exist compared to the number of managed services companies, right?
Yeah, okay, yeah. I mean, here we just auto-upgrade everything. So do we need to triage security issues? No, nothing like that. We just, if security back comes up, we're like, huh, that's funny. Are we patched? Yeah, of course we patched. How could we not be patched, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it gets more complicated, you know, when you're in an environment with, you know, 200 or 300 customers who all have their own requirements.
And you update something and it takes down this critical website. And I can definitely understand, although, you know, the advantage of having two production environments that are balanced, you do...
For sure. I mean, we have these kind of chicken waving things that we do to try and address these problems.
Yeah, yeah. But doesn't that solve the problem almost completely? You have tests that verify that the application works after the upgrade, so... Set up a clone, do the upgrade, think it works, switch it over.
Yeah, agreed. That's a good way of doing it.
Of course, if you're an MSP and client's like, hey, we have $10 this month, so...
You're in a situation where you have 200 or 300 of these clients, you know, a small team of people and different people you have to contact for each one, different processes, different testing, different test teams,
Yeah.
It gets to be hard work. I assume that the big software packages like I think Kaseya and, you know, that kind of stuff have functionality for this built in, but
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you think about a lot of infrastructure nowadays, they try and just hide a lot of things from you as well. You know, if you're using an Amazon service, the ELBs, you never know if they're updated. They're constantly being updated because they just run Nginx or something, right?
Yeah, probably.
Just constantly updated. And they're just like, oh, a bug affects you now that it's updated? Sucks. Right? Like,
yeah, you should have engineered it in a more HA fashion. That's the great thing with cloud providers, right? You can just be crap at it and be like, it's not our problem. You should have done a better job with your application.
Yeah. The AWS has like a specific, they're particularly annoying because they're like, everything they say is just like, make sure it works, like make sure it's distributed over everything. So they kind of have like a fallback.
We're going to reboot your shit.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just like, we reboot your shit all the time. So you kind of have to architect, which is a nice way to.
It's not a bad system. You know, the old, was it Netflix, I think, originally had the
Chaos Monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That when I first heard about that, it kind of blew my mind. I was like, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lesson that we've learned from it's a lesson that we haven't learned from the aerospace industry, you know, is that your backup process has to be a part of your everyday process as well.
Otherwise it's not.
How do you know it's working?
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to like go try turn your generator on. Well, you don't want to try start the spare engine on your airplane while you're already in the sky.
Yeah. 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 You want to make sure that shit's working before you take off, and then you can be.
Yeah. And, you know, use it the whole time. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We did me out when I was on a plane once, and he was like, oh, we're going to change fuel tanks. I'm like, oh, what? He's like, we're just going to switch to the other fuel tank. I was like, oh, okay. Is that a thing planes can do? Turns out they can. Interesting. Control from one, the other. It was weird. It was like a small plane.
Right.
So he flicked it from the to the middle.
Yeah. I mean, that's a rope and pulley system, so I don't feel too worried about that, right? You know, like a ball valve.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
As long as the ball still has a hole in the middle, the petrol's probably still going to go into the plane.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the worst that can happen? You just glide down gracefully, right?
Yeah, that's right. Now, if that switch was like a GPIO on a Linux system on
little
chip,
Arduino.
And like, Arduino is probably not even that bad, but imagine like fuel tank D.
Running, and you know it's running as like pit zero, right? Because system D like consumed that at some point.
Yeah, that's right. You know, system D, fuel tank D. Push the switch, it runs system CDL. Fuel tank space switch.
Yeah.
No, sorry, switch space fuel tank.
Fucking, you know what's really fucking that every time. What was so annoying yesterday, and this is a problem with an init script, not actually systemd at all. So I was like, oh, my Apache's down. That's weird. I did an upgrade and Apache died. I was like, whatever. It's not a critical system. I know it's going to happen. So I was like, oh, Apache start. I was like, oh, status crashed, bro. Can't start it. I'm like, oh, status stop? And it's like, okay, we'll stop it. Can't find a PID with that. Sorry, mate. I see the PID's there. It's not running though. So
the old Unix double fork, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, no, it never made sense, and try not to think about how much it's cost society in the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's why we need systemd.
Systemd is good because the normal case for systemd is that a daemon just starts and then runs.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, well, you want a double fork? What's wrong with you? Like, don't do that. Just start. I'll do that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we are running near the end of the show.
I think Hugh's asking questions in the chat, and I can't be bothered answering them.
Okay.
So,
I guess they make a bunch of DSA, kicking them out, tail. Oh, this is the format you talked about.
Yeah, okay. So the stuff we talked about at iSIG is actually different again to this. But it's not much more or less useful.
Same family of just like, it's hard to do this.
Yeah,
right?
it's RDF. So if you're really into exotic languages that are not quite SQL, then, you know, you'll be all over it. But
SQL? This doesn't look like SQL. Yeah. I hate when I'm testing an app and it looks like it's SQL, but it's not SQL. And you're like, SQL injection, not SQL injection. Bullshit, man. Okay. You got anything else you want to mention before we go?
Well, let me just have a look at my list here. Let's see what we got. Oh, hang on. I just got to put my password in.
Boop, boop, boop. The computer is just beeping. What computer is that? Tell the viewers.
So tonight's show notes have been read off the Apple Newton eMate 300. A classic at any age.
Cute little beast.
Yeah, really refreshing kind of alien computer to use in 2018. Mm.
It looks nice to like carry and hold.
Yeah,
though.
It's got the ergonomic design. It's really well thought out. It's a shame that they A shame that they only sold them to schools and children. If everyone was like, yeah, I'd buy an eMate. And they were like, no, it's for children. It's a $1,000 computer for children. You, person with money, we don't want your business. This is for children.
It's for children, yeah.
And yet it has like a diary and a phone dialer and...
With diary for kids, kind of, right? Kids
yeah, diaries. It's got like a fax capability and, you know, it's...
Can you put Chrome on it?
No, in fact, I'm not actually sure that there is a web browser. Certainly has no networking capability out of the box. So, yeah.
Interesting.
But, I think we've pretty much covered it. I mean,
yeah.
I got a lot of stuff in here that we could talk about, but maybe we'll save it for another bus factor.
Yep, fair enough. So the buses have calmed down now. It was pretty crazy for a while there, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was intense. Yeah. Man, we just sit here and like, actually look at the buses.
Yeah.
It's quite a different experience to just riding one home.
Yes, it definitely is. Although, yeah, because when you're riding it, I don't even look at the lights. I'm just like, he's doing illegal shit. Whatever, leave him be. I want to get home.
I always think of, you know how ladybirds get in amongst aphids and they like herd them around? I always think of buses.
I have not seen that.
I always think of buses as being kind of the ladybirds to the traffic aphids, you know?
Yeah, and they just like,
just they coordinate and they know what's best. They keep the traffic calm and subservient.
Wait, hang on. Do ladybugs eat? Do they eat aphids?
No, they kind of herd them. They treat them like cattle.
Why? What do they do with them?
It's really interesting. I can't remember the rest of this.
Because you eat cattle. This is what you. That's
maybe
why
they
you
do. I'm going to suggest that you look this up on Wikipedia.
I'm going to do it because that sounds like super crazy.
Yeah, you know, they leak milk out of their knees, that kind of stuff.
Jesus. Hey, you know what I found out recently? Human nipples, they're not like a bottle. It doesn't pour out one little bit. It's more like a shower
head.
Yeah,
that's right. Multiple apertures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Found that out recently.
Yeah, the human body abhors a bottle design.
When I urinate, that's kind of like a bottle.
I don't want to talk about that, Stephen.
Okay. Well, we can end it here for today. I don't know who's going to be on next week, but we'll hopefully have someone as wonderful as the esteemed Michael here. But we'll see. We might be stuck with someone like me. So we'll see what happens.
Thanks, Stephen. It's been fun. Cool. This isn't recorded, right?
Yeah, it's 100% recorded. This will stick around for the rest of your life. So you need to link this to your parents, your family.
Fantastic.
Everyone. All right. We will catch you next week. Hope everyone has a good day. See ya.